Good afternoon and welcome. Thank you for taking your time joining us this late hour on the first day of TechEd, unless you did the pre-con yesterday. The session that will simply never die, I think. We have been doing driver sessions now for years at TechEd or MMS at more conferences. My name is Johan. I'm a MVP. I used to be a deployment MVP. I switched recently to config manager, but I still do OS deployment, but with config manager. So with me, I have the MDT master himself, Mr. Michael Niehaus.
So I'm Mike Niehaus. I'm the program manager now on the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit team. And I guess we've been doing driver management for as long as we've been doing OS deployment, which is more than either of us will probably admit publicly. And it's not a simple discussion. It's really about options and tools and techniques and opposite ends of the spectrum. So that's how we kind of got into this control freak versus dynamic developer contest initially. Now it's not so much a contest, it's a discussion. So that's what we want to go through in the session today, is talk about what options do you have, what challenges are you going to run into, what can we do to help you with the driver management decisions that you need to make for your OS deployment projects.
As you can see, we are opening up a Twitter hashtag that we are monitoring here on stage. So if you have any comments or questions or whatever throughout the session, feel free to post them, and we'll be trying to answer as many of them as we can. And if you don't get the time to answer them in the session, well, some of us will make sure they are answered after the session, so you get your questions answered. All right. Ta-da.
So first, just an agenda of what we want to try to go through today. First, we want to talk about just the driver babble, talking about why are drivers so hard, why are they so much of a pain, what are all the things that we really need to worry about around drivers. Then let's shift discussions to talking about the tools. So looking at it from the perspective of someone who's using MDT and someone who's using Config Manager to figure out how would you do an effective driver strategy using those tools and using the third-party tools that are available to help with that. Once we get through that discussion, hopefully we've raised some questions in your heads, and you can then say, okay, I have some ideas, I have some questions, and we can do some Q&A to talk about some more specific scenarios that you might be interested in.
So the clicker.
First off, I already got it.
You stole the remote.
I stole the remote.
Bah.
First, we had to deal with all the general driver challenges, which... For those of you who've been doing this for a while, it's probably fairly obvious that gathering all of these drivers is a challenge because you have to go to each of the vendor sites. You need to download all the different driver packages. Until recently, that meant downloading lots of self-extracting executables and different flavors of driver installers and then trying to figure out, now, how do I get the actual driver out of that package? Because the tools that we end up using just want raw drivers. How do we get down to just the raw drivers that we need to do the deployments? Then we've got apps that go along with those drivers. In order to use this Bluetooth adapter, you need to have a software stack that goes along with it. So now how do we install the applications that go along with the drivers? Is there a way to install just the driver without the application? Is there a way to separate the two? You run into challenges like that with some of these more specialized devices all the time. You also then end up with vendors who think you must have their application even though their application is useless. How do we get rid of those? We don't want all of that bloat on top of our images for a touchpad tuning application. Give us a simple control panel.
Yeah, and they also bring a movie across as well so you can see how we're supposed to use the touchpad.
Bring a movie in 37 different languages. Yeah, you really don't need all of that bulk. Who's ever heard of a touchpad driver that's 100 meg? That's just excessive. So how do you deal with issues like that? What about vendors who are constantly releasing updated versions of drivers? The newer drivers support the newest devices. That's good. But then they start dropping the older ones. So you have devices throughout your enterprise that might use the old and the new one. Now, how do you deal with multiple versions of that same driver in order to effectively support all the devices in your environment? Then we've got all the drivers that are just bad. I mean, they don't come with proper INFs. They might be missing files. They might say that they support x64 when they really support x86. All kinds of issues that, for them, don't matter so much because they're really packaging drivers for consumers and making them available like that, and you use their installer, and their installer has the necessary prereq checks and everything else in there to make sure they don't do anything wrong. But we're going around all that. We want to extract the drivers from the package and have the OS install them. If you tell the OS to install an x64 driver, and it turns out that it isn't an x64 driver, what happens? It blue screens. The OS doesn't know any better. It tries to install the driver. Driver install succeeds. It tries to start the driver. Driver's not the right platform. Stop error. So that means now we have to pay attention to the drivers that say one thing but really mean something else. How can we detect those? How can we deal with those? And then the last item on the list are these two-tier drivers or bus drivers where you have to install one driver before you can see the devices that are on that bus. So how do we deal with that? How do we make sure that these systems that we have in place to automatically detect what drivers are needed can figure out this situation? How can they detect the bus driver and then detect what's behind it? Are there ways that we can try to work the system so that these two-tier drivers actually work properly? So we end up with all those challenges, and really then we have to start somewhere with trying to address them. And the perfect place to start is the largest OEMs. How can the OEMs help by making your lives as IT pros easier? As I mentioned before, they tend to focus on more of the consumer scenarios. The person who goes out to their support site types in their serial number or asset tag, and they get a list of devices that are needed for that particular machine. You're doing this in mass. You want to be able to go out to Dell and select all the drivers for all the models you support, and HP and get all the drivers for all the models that you support, and not have to worry about extracting them from whatever packaging format they might be in. So that's where we've been campaigning with the OEMs to say, you need to do this. And one started doing this a couple of years ago. Dell started creating the CAB files where they would package up all the drivers needed for a particular model. So they started that, which is nice because after that, that means we can start using shame to shame the other OEMs into doing the same thing. It's taken a while, but they've been coming around with HP and Lenovo and others starting to see that, hey, we can do the same thing. It builds popularity with the IT pro audience. The IT pro audience is the audience that buys our PCs. So then let's take a look at those different tools. How can we get the drivers from the OEMs that are starting to provide these additional packages for just for IT pros? And then for those that haven't yet seen the light, what other tools can we use to try to help out with that depackaging process to get the raw drivers into MDT or into Config Manager?
I'm number 4.
All right. No matter what deployment solution you are using, may it be LightTouch, may it be Config Manager, may it be a third party, you still need the drivers, you still need to find them. And as Michael said, some vendors are, well, better than others. So, for example, Dell does provide you with the CAB files Michael mentioned. So if you go to the Dell CAB file site, you will actually see exactly that. You will have, for their business models, you will have either a combo pack that is available for often quite a bunch of models, or you have the individual system model. So if I start Zoomit is the utility that allows me to zoom, we will see that we have ready-made cab files for each specific model, and sometimes both for Windows XP and for Windows 7, or even, God forbid you deploy this, Windows Vista still, they are available too. Don't do that. Go Windows 7 instead. It's better. Sorry. So Dell has these cab files. HP have their softpack download manager, which they still, for some odd reason, defaults to the FTP protocol for when you start to download drivers and get the catalog. And if your firewall is not open for FTP in your corporate network, this tool will time out the first time. But you can start it with HTTP support instead. So that's good. Anyway, HP as well, for their business models, allow you to simply go in and select a given model that you have, select an OS, in this case Windows 7.64, and you click Find Available Softpacks. It will go ahead and download the drivers that are for that model. And of course, you could select multiple, but I prefer to do the model by model, because when it downloads the drivers, it puts them in the same folder. And if I do them one by one, I can simply move away those drivers after a while. So here I can select a few drivers and simply go ahead and either click download, or I click download and unpack, and then I will get them in an extracted format on the drive. However, now, quite recently, just a few months ago, HP did start to do what Dell did. So shame apparently works. They are now providing boot image cabs for the boot image drivers. We'll come back to that later. But they also provide you with combo packs for not all models. Yeah, that's worth an applause. For a bunch of models. And if I right-click that combo pack and view the CVA from HP, you will get a listing of what models this package is using. And we are going to talk about different methods later today on how to deploy the drivers. But combo packs can be a way to reduce the number of folders, for example, in MDT or packages in Config Manager by simply combining drivers into larger packages. If you have Lenovo's, they are using their update retriever, which does not start at all on server 2012, which I'm running as my host here. So I have started up a Windows Server 2008 machine, and then I start the update retriever that Lenovo has. And in here, you type in the Lenovo model name, and Lenovo doesn't do model names like most others. They do numbers. And it's the first four numbers in the model name that is the actual model name. So in this case, I'm typing in 4178, which of course translates to a ThinkPad T420. And then you click Next, and it will download all the downloaded catalog for this model shortly.
So does anyone have any curiosity what happens when Lenovo runs out of four-digit numbers? They're going to break all kinds of things.
Well, I mean, it's still like 10,000.
They've been using those four-digit numbers since the 60s, though. Even their mainframe product numbers use those same four-digit numbers.
I take you would know because you used to...
I used to work on those mainframes.
Yes. Anyway, here you see all the drivers from the Lenovo's, and I can do the same thing here. I can select whatever driver I want, and I can download them. But they are not being extracted by default. They're just being downloaded in a weird MSI package with really undocumented switches using the inner installer, whatever, to extract them. However, if you go to the repository, if you cancel this wizard out and click the repository, you can actually select the machines that you have downloaded before. Ah, crap. Sorry. You need to click the right links. It helps. You need to click Export. And then you can specify a folder, and you can export whatever driver you have. And then they will be extracted so that our deployment solution can use them. So depending on vendor, you have different tools, but the larger OEMs, they actually start to understand the need for us to be able to very efficiently grab those drivers and go ahead and add them into our deployment solution.
I think customers have gotten smarter over the years, too, where they will negotiate for purchasing large quantities of these machines and put that into the purchase orders.
That could be as well.
You must provide raw drivers for this OS and this device, or we're not going to buy the machines. That always helps.
Yep. That could be a good tip. Just a question, what if you can't find the driver at the vendor site? Or you are deploying a model that was created in the Vista time frame, but you bought the new solid-state drive and put in it, so you can now use it a few more years, and you go to the vendor site and you try to find a Windows 7 driver, you can't find it because they don't have it. What can you do then? Exactly, you can go to the vendor's vendor and try to find the stuff. What if you can't find it at the vendor's vendor, and the vendor's vendor could be Broadcom, Intel, whatever, ATI. I can try to find a likable hardware or similar hardware, yeah, and get the drivers. And sometimes even a Vista driver will work in Windows 7, depending on what type of driver. But Microsoft also provides you with drivers. So if you go to the Catalog Update Microsoft.com site, you can still search for drivers if you need them. So if you need drivers for a fingerprint driver, one Authentic, for example, you can simply just type in Authentic, and you will get the list of Authentic drivers. Or if you have a video driver, for example, this NVIDIA whatever, great to play StarCraft video card style is, and you just copy the plug and play ID from it, you can actually search for that as well, but you need to clean it up a little bit. You need to remove the revision number in the end so that you only have the actual vendor ID, NVIDIA, and the device ID. And then you can search for that, and you will see all available drivers that Microsoft has certified for this hardware. And this is actually one of the few places where you will see Windows 8 drivers start to pop up because the vendors are not yet releasing them. I know Intel does, but most of the others don't. But here's where you can find them if you want to play around and test. So with that, we'll go back to PowerPoint and the ClickMaster. Here we go.
I go the right.
Yeah, you did.
That is right.
So what you can do, as Michael was going into before, is try to buy larger batches of machines. I was visiting a customer outside Chicago last year, and they had 296 models, which is a lot. And by buying larger batches, you can actually reduce, you can standardize on the models that you have. And guess what? Less models meaning less pain, less drivers to download, less machines to test. Better option to have a sort of a nice experience for drivers. Also, if you do buy drivers or drivers, duh. If you do buy hardware from the larger vendors, again, HP, Lenovo, Dell, Toshiba, Panasonic, all these guys, they have a pretty good story around drivers. If you are buying machines from the guy at the corner or the local gas station who sells them very cheaply, they might not provide you with those driver sets. Or even utilities to configure the hardware as part of your deployment. For example, if you want to have BitLocker, sure, you need to have the driver for the TPM chip, but guess what? It needs to be enabled in BIOS. The deployment solutions will take care of the partitioning, but they won't take care of enabling that TPM in the BIOS and set the password. But the big vendors, they provide you with utilities that allow you to do that as part of your deployment process. And life is good. And as you probably learned by now, Windows 7, you can have a single image for every piece of hardware that you have, of course, per architecture. In XP, that was also possible, but it was not supported. Now it's supported. So Windows 7 is image-based and works with a single image all the way across. Yeah.
Okay, So then we get to talking about approaches. So we know how to get drivers. We know where to get drivers. We know how to extract drivers. Now, how do we get them into the tools and deal with them for the actual deployment process? So we have basically two ends of the spectrum. We have chaos at one end, which is pretty much dump all the drivers together and let Windows and the software that we're running figure out what's needed where. In the case of MDT, that means scanning plug-and-play IDs, identifying the drivers that are necessary, copy them all down to the machine, and let Windows pick one of all the available drivers for each device. In the case of Config Manager, very similar. Detect all the plug-and-play IDs, send a request off to the management point asking for drivers, and download what it thinks are the best drivers for those devices. Still, in that chaos mode, it really means you better hope that the drivers that end up getting picked work on all the different devices. Cross your fingers. That's kind of the ultimate chaos mode. Or test very heavily to make sure that this big pile of drivers that you have will actually work for all the different models of devices that you have in your environment. So let's say in this chaos mode that you import another driver, another NVIDIA driver. You get a new model of a laptop from HP, you see that it needs a new driver, you download it, you add it into the pile. Great, it works great with that new model of PC. Problem solved, right? Well, maybe. You don't know what that new driver is going to do for any of the other models in your environment. Are you willing to chance it? Or are you going to retest the deployment to all those different models of machines? If you're going to retest it, you better have a lab sitting around with one of each of those models of machines in it so that you can do that testing. Or you just wait for the help desk call to happen from someone who gets an old machine deployed with the new driver and finds out that it doesn't work. And, well, maybe that's not your problem and you don't care, but hopefully it's the enterprise's problem that you're looking to solve and avoid those types of challenges. So that's one end of the spectrum, that the systems are smart enough to figure out what drivers are necessary based on the plug-and-play IDs, pull them down to the machine, and inject them. The opposite end of the spectrum is really trying to say, I want much more control over that process. I want to explicitly specify every driver that gets injected on every model of machine for every OS that I'm deploying. So I'm willing to put in the administrative work to figure out for a ThinkPad W500 when I'm deploying Windows 7 x86, here's the list of drivers. Okay, at that point, that plug-and-play detection logic that MDT and Config Manager do really doesn't even matter because you're going to do the work ahead of time, build a package, build a selection profile, build a folder containing the drivers that are necessary for that model and for that OS, and just tell the system which one to use. The good side of that, you will never have to worry about adding a new driver into a folder for one model affecting any other model. So your testing now is going to focus on just the new model that you're adding into the mix. The downside, you have more administrative work up front to build each of these folders containing the drivers that are needed to support all the models and OS combinations that you have in your environment. So those are kind of the two ends of the spectrum. Which is the right way to go about doing it? Either, both, somewhere in the middle? It really depends because there are lots of mitigating factors. You can probably find a happy medium somewhere along that spectrum. It might not be 100% control freak. Let's say that you need to support printers and smartphone drivers and various other types of specialized hardware that might be attached to a PC. If you're doing completely control freak, how are you going to identify the presence of those devices so that you can target the necessary package of drivers to those devices? So, well, maybe you do the core bundle for the models using the control freak method, and then you have the chaos method to try to fix up anything else that's missing. So how can you combine these together and put them into a functional solution? That's really the the discussion. If you want to go to one end, are we willing to do the testing to make sure that we have a reliable system? If we want to go to the other end, are we willing to put in the administrative effort to build these profiles of drivers that we're going to use on each machine? That becomes the debate. Which end of this arrow are you going to try to land on?
Before you jump into this one, I know this is your slide because I have the manuscript over here. I got a question in the feed. Any tips for dealing with Panasonic drivers? And the challenge here is, in what order do they need to be installed? Now, the first tip I have is avoid using their installers. And the reason I know this is because I spent a week in their headquarters in New Jersey extracting drivers for their consultant part of the company that obviously installs a lot of Panasonic devices. So get the drivers and extract them. And then Windows will figure out in what order to install them. Because when we deploy drivers using either MDT or Config Manager, there is always three steps that happens. First, the deployment solution will figure out the drivers that are needed. Then they are being copied locally. They are being injected into the store, and eventually setup will install them. And that last part, after you injected them or the solution injected them into the store, you can't really control the order there. That's something that setup will do. So the solution for Panasonic is really to extract them first and don't use their installers because they are painful to get in the right order.
Yeah. In most cases, driver installation order doesn't matter because drivers are completely independent of one another. It's the apps that cause the challenges. The apps may have dependencies on other apps, so you had to install the apps in the order that makes the apps work, which is why we'd rather there not be any apps. It would be much better if the driver would take care of installing the necessary pieces. There are vendors who have started to shift some that direction to say, okay, I need an app, or I need a control panel, or I need something to go along with this driver to configure the device. Wouldn't it be great if the INF would just install that as part of the driver plug-and-play process? So they're starting to go that direction. But at the same time, there are other vendors who say, that's a lot of work. We want to go the other direction and just have a bare INF that installs the bare minimum for Windows to get the driver to function, and then we'll have this MSI or this setup.exe that takes care of installing the application pieces. We keep trying to steer them one direction. They keep trying to steer the other direction. So it's a constant battle, and that's probably a battle that will rage on forever. Okay, so is there a question? So the question was about the Windows logo program, and are there ways to improve the logo program to help with these challenges? Yeah, and that is something that we've explored over the years, talking to the Windows logo and device manufacturers and driver authors to see, can we increase the requirements to try to make sure that there are no bad INFs? Well, they don't even agree on the definition of a bad INF. So it's a very difficult discussion to have with them. Not that we haven't tried and not that we won't continue to try, but over the 6 years or so that we've been having the discussion, we haven't made a whole lot of progress yet. They would love to solve the problem by redesigning the whole driver management infrastructure. Imagine that compatibility headache if Windows 9 came out and had a completely different way of dealing with drivers, kind of like the move from legacy applications to modern apps, metro apps. It would be great if we could do something like that with drivers as well. But we're not yet to that point. We're stuck with the legacy of a driver process that hasn't really radically changed since Windows NT 1.0. It's a little different than it was in Windows 95, but Windows NT driver installation processes are pretty much unchanged since the original Windows NT release.
Except for that they didn't have plug-and-play, though.
So then we run into the other challenges. Boot images. Boot images are kind of a separate case because we need, well, we need the drivers for the network adapters and the mass storage adapters so that once you boot into this boot image, it can get back to the network share to install the necessary pieces, and it can access the hard drive to actually write the OS and write those pieces to the hard drive. Anything else is just extra bulk to carry around in the boot image. So now you have to figure out, well, what's the bare minimum set of drivers that are necessary in Windows PE in order to be able to access the network and the disk. You may also run into challenges because Windows PE is going to use a different set of drivers than the full operating system. If you're deploying Windows XP and using Windows PE 3.0, you need Windows 7 drivers for PE, you need Windows XP drivers for XP. Fortunately, most people are now moving to Windows 7, but the discussion will continue to happen because we'll always have newer versions of Windows PE that may be used to deploy older versions of OSs. So at that point, you need mechanisms that allow you to separate out the boot critical drivers that you want to put into these boot images from those larger sets of drivers. Because a boot image has to work on every model of machine in your environment. That's a basic requirement that if it can't boot, access the network, and access the disk on every single machine in your environment, it's not complete. What can we do to make it complete? We've gotten lucky over the years that the vendors have started providing Windows PE driver packs, kind of the same way that they provided CAB files, where they'll bundle together all the drivers that they think are needed for Windows PE to support all their currently supported models on a particular OS. So they at least give you a good starting point. There may be extras, there may be missing pieces, so you may still need to go through some additional work. If you went the total chaos route and just said, well, okay, let the system figure it out, the system may decide that you need to put way too many drivers in that boot image. Like in Config Manager, if you tell Config Manager to import a batch of drivers and you check a box that say add this to a boot image, it'll take every driver that it imported and put it into that boot image. Well, what good is a modem driver in Windows PE?
You might want to send a fax during deployment. You
need a... Maybe, but the reality is you end up just making the boot image big, bulky, and probably cause other problems along the way as well. So filtering that list of Windows PE drivers down to the bare minimum, fortunately, it's not a terribly difficult challenge because you know the goal is NIC and mass storage and that's it. Maybe there are a few system drivers, maybe there are a few other special purpose drivers that you need on top of that. Like it's nice to have a functioning mouse, a functioning display adapter, so maybe there are a few exceptions that you need to get into the boot image to handle some specific hardware issues, but for the most part, you don't need anything beyond that.
Can you, is there any way for you to convince the WinPE team to add in audio so that we actually can play music while deploying?
Well, if we can't convince them to add wireless, I don't think they're going to be too willing to add audio either. Those do seem to be the most commonly requested subsystems, though. Wireless, okay, we understand wireless. It would be nice in a lot of scenarios to be able to do an OS deployment across wireless. Audio gets requested by the OEMs because they want to use Windows PE for device testing, and they would like the audio support in Windows PE.
And for accessibility. People with screen readers, visually impaired, they would like to do deployments too. It would be nice.
Probably in the U.S., since we're a bit lawyer happy, you could file a lawsuit and you might actually win that one.
I got an idea here.
Okay, so then we have the operating system drivers. We've already really talked about those. That's the entire set of drivers that we need to worry about, where we do need to worry about audio and video and NICs. Well, NICs and mass storage, obviously, but every type of driver we need to make sure that it's installed. there can be drivers that maybe you don't care about. How many of you get upset when you see a banged device in a machine that you've deployed? And your goal is zero banged out devices. Is that really 100% necessary? No, but it makes us feel good. I mean, if you don't have a driver in place for a Intel vPro device, okay, if you're not using vPro anyway, it doesn't hurt anything. But yeah, it looks bad. So most of us do it more out of pride.
A driver also can control power consumption of the machine. And a device without a driver can behave differently than if you have a driver for it. So it can affect, shutdown, hibernation times and such. So, and it does look beautiful to have a clean device manager.
Yeah, so we have talked over the years about, well, wouldn't it be nice to put a script into our task sequences to inspect the machine at the end of the deployment and log warnings for any banged out devices to say that the driver wasn't found for this.
I had another script. When we create reference images for old XP, SysPrep don't really like unknown devices, so we wrote the script that deletes them.
Yeah, they'll at least be put back as unknown devices later.
No. Then you add the driver. Then you deploy it. But it looks nice in Device Manager.
Yeah.
How about actually doing this?
Yeah, so let's focus on first how to do it with light touch. So how can we try to build up a structure that could hit either end of that spectrum? How can we do anything from total chaos all the way up through complete control freak? So the first thing, it's good to know that you have a driver, you have a deployment share. That's where your driver repository is stored. You import all your drivers into that driver store. Once they're imported, you don't need the original source files anymore. You might choose to keep a folder structure around. I know Johan keeps a physical folder structure separate from an MDT logical folder structure. But really, MDT is completely self-contained, has all the drivers contained inside of the deployment share.
It's nice to have a good source.
You can then build logical folders inside of that deployment share and use those for grouping drivers together. That's where having a mechanism, having a scheme for doing that organization really helps out. How am I going to create those folders? What's that hierarchy going to look like? We can then create selection profiles where those selection profiles control what folders are used when, or we can use the folders directly. So let's walk through that process and let's see what that structure would look like.
It accidentally slipped to demo.
Yes, which is just going to hurry me along into the demo.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Exactly.
Yes. So
do you want to switch as well?
Push three.
Three for you, sir, coming up.
So what I've done is I've built out three different deployment shares. I have deployment shares that represent each of the scenarios, starting with total chaos. And I don't think Zoomit's going to work on this machine because it crashed earlier and I had to reboot it. Sorry. But in this structure, the total chaos is really just import all the drivers into one big bucket. So if we look in the out-of-box drivers folder, I have imported drivers for about, I think it's a dozen different models into this list. And if we scroll down the list, we end up with quite a few different devices. And to make matters worse, quite a few different versions of the same device. Like we have four different versions of this ATI HDW76 driver. Don't know what it is, but for some reason we have four versions of it. We look, we can see that it's a media driver of some type. Well, that narrows it down. But, yeah, we have lots of these devices that we end up importing and really no way of knowing how would we even begin to clean this up. If I delete one of these, what's going to happen? I have no idea without trying it on every single device to see does it still work. So that becomes a problem. You basically have to assume that the whole set is necessary all the time to do all the deployments. I don't have any folder structures. I don't have any real organization here. I just have task sequences that say when I'm deploying this operating system, I want to automatically detect the drivers that are needed from a selection profile that contains every driver and match them by plug-and-play ID. So basically, system, go figure it out. Inject all the drivers that are necessary. With the proper lab, with the proper testing, you can do that. I've seen the largest enterprise that I've seen do it this way has over 400,000 PCs, and they can do this effectively. They have managed to take a driver repository like that and continue to work at it until they got it down to a proper set of drivers that works on every single device they support. They have one of every device that they support in a single room, in a single building where they can test just by pushing a button. So run this task sequence on every single machine, and if it gets through to completion with no banged out devices on every single machine, sign off. Our driver repository is set, ready to go. They'll repeat that process then for each operating system that they're deploying. So they went through it with Windows XP, they went through it with Vista, they went through it with Windows 7, they're now going through it again for Windows 8. Each time they create a brand new set, a brand new driver repository. So basically, start from scratch, we're going to build this up again. I'm trying to remember if it was somewhere around 100, and when they would go through and clean it up to get it down to the bare minimum, they would end up with about 2 gig of drivers. That's actually pretty good for that number of models. If you were to not go through the cleanup effort, like for the customer that had over 200, you could easily end up with 20 gig of drivers. But it's also probably 15 gig of garbage. So how do you get rid of the garbage? How do you separate the garbage from the drivers? Generally, that's not worth the hassle, as long as it works. They went through the hassle of cleaning that up, figuring out from each INF what files are actually needed. If it's not needed, let's remove it. Now let's test it and see if we didn't break anything. Repeat over and over and over and over again. It takes an army of people. Helps that they had a military of people to do that kind of work. So it is possible, and it can work, but at least you probably need to deal with this situation. I've got Windows 7, I've got Windows XP, they're both x86, but I probably don't really want to try to do both of those OS deployments from the same driver repository. So at the very least, you probably want to add some predictability into this and say, I'm going to segregate my drivers into 3 different buckets. I want drivers for Windows PE, I want drivers for Windows XP, I want drivers for Windows 7. For the Windows PE drivers, I can then create a selection profile for Windows PE. For XP, create a selection profile that contains just that folder. And for Windows 7, same thing. Now on my deployment share properties, for Windows PE, I can say that I want to use only the drivers for Windows PE when I'm building my boot images. And in my task sequences, I can specify, when I'm injecting drivers, the appropriate selection profile. So for Windows 7 x86, I'm going to use the Windows 7 selection profile and still do auto-apply matching. So it's still chaos within these selection profiles, within these folders. But at least I've now separated Windows 7 drivers from Windows XP. So you're starting down that path. Now, in this case, it was only x86. If you wanted to do x86 and x64, you would end up with 6 folders instead of 3 folders. So you're starting to branch out and break it down a little bit more. But in the end, it's still chaos. You still have to test on every single machine to make sure that the end-to-end process is going to work out okay, or wait for the help desk calls to come in when it doesn't. Effectively, yeah, the out-of-box installation for Windows will try to install any driver that matches from the Windows source. However, Windows doesn't certify that the drivers are supported by the devices that are out there. It's actually the manufacturers of those devices. So Microsoft delegates that responsibility out to the OEMs, and will only include a driver in box if the OEM gives them permission and will sign off to say that they support that. must be logo certified. They must provide the necessary support. It's a whole bunch of requirements before they'll put it in box. If the OEM says, please remove this driver, guess what? We'll remove the driver. So we provide those in box as a convenience, basically, just to make sure that the install experience is as good as possible. Windows Update then becomes the supplement to that. Same basic process involved, but instead of being in box, we can get more from the web. So as time goes by, the set of drivers in box continues to shrink. The set of drivers on Windows Update continues to grow because it's much easier to maintain what's on Windows Update than it is what's in the operating system image itself. So then we get to the third scenario, which is really at the far end of the spectrum. I want to be a control freak. How can I group my drivers first by platform? Because now I'm deploying x86 and x64. Then by operating system, because I'm deploying Windows 7 and Windows XP. I need to worry about Windows PE, so maybe I have some mass storage and NIC drivers to include there. Same thing for x64. But now to take it as far as possible, I want to throw the model into this mix. So let's start building out folders for each model. So before, like when we were doing just the folders per OS, we would create a folder, we would create a selection profile that included that folder, and then we would edit the task sequence to say inject drivers from that selection profile. That would be extremely tedious for each one of these folders to say create a folder, create a selection profile, create a step in the task sequence that uses that selection profile that has a condition on it that says only use this step when that matches. Way too much administrative effort. So we try to simplify things and say, well, first, we don't need the selection profile. We can use the folders directly. We can tell MDT, please inject the drivers from only these matching folders without using the selection profile. So to do that, we would go into the task sequence, in this case, Windows 7 x86, find that same inject driver step, configure it to say the selection profile should be nothing, and then say install all drivers from the selection profile. So how the heck does that actually achieve anything? Guess what drivers are in the selection profile? Nothing. No drivers, none at all. No folders are included in that selection profile. So the only way this works is if you have another task sequence variable called driver group 001 in this case, set to a folder path to include on top of that. Because what MDT ends up doing is it takes all the folders in the selection profile and then adds in any folders that were specified via the driver group list. So nothing plus a single folder equals a single folder. So as a result, this step ends up finding the drivers in x86, Windows 7, and then the model alias value that corresponds to that model. Now, this kind of goes back to some of the challenges with those four-digit model numbers with Lenovo. You could put in the specific model string, 1234ABC, but with Lenovo, only the first four characters are consistent. The last three represent a configuration. You really don't want to create a folder for 1234AAA, 1234BBB, 1234CCC, because they might all be the same model of PC, just a slightly different configuration. So there are scripts out there from the deployment guys and other places that can look in other places to try to figure out what's the real model for this, and it sets variables like model alias to a more friendly value that's easier to use to build these folder structures, much more readable. So we can make use of that in here. So that means that we're going to consider only that folder when we're doing this driver injection. But remember before I said you might want to do a hybrid scenario. So we may want to do another round where we say we want to install extra drivers. Now in this case, I would need a different selection profile that contains the extra drivers. And I really probably don't want to install all of them. I want to do the plug and play matching on those. So I can put as many of these steps into the task sequence as I need to kind of do hybrid scenarios to tie these different things together. The main complication here is we've set this driver group to a certain group here and done the driver injection. We then need to clear it or set it to a specific folder, in this case x86 Windows 7 Extra, in order to have the process work successfully the second or third or fourth time beyond that.
What about using multiple driver groups, incrementing the folder?
You can certainly do that. You just need to worry about maintaining the list properly. If you do it through the task sequence, and you could explicitly specify 002 and 003 here, then it's fairly easy to get the proper variable set in the proper sequence, and everything ends up working out okay. But if you're trying to build it up more dynamically, then back away from the task sequence and start looking at using custom settings to build up the same thing.
I was more thinking about having that model folder than just having a mandatory driver folder as well for every, you know, other stuff I want to inject, keyboards
sure.
and
yeah, you can do it. You can come up with all kinds of variations on these themes. Just think about the possibility that you can do always apply for, say, the model core drivers, and then do auto apply for additional drivers beyond that, and maybe even have a third one that's auto apply from this pool of random printer drivers. Maybe you have a printers folder or something like that that you want to throw into this mix too. So you can keep expanding on this and just keep thinking of what's the problem I'm trying to solve. I need to install drivers for whatever printer might be on the person's desk. Okay, how can I best address that? Well, injecting 250 printer drivers on every single machine is not the right way to address that, when I can do auto apply and figure out on the fly which specific printer driver is needed for that machine. So,
assuming the printer is on.
Assuming the printer's on. Yeah. If the printer's not on and they plug it in later, well, you need to have a process or a solution for that, regardless of what happens at deploy time. Hopefully, your end users don't have admin rights. They can't install drivers themselves. That problem will happen. They'll call the help desk and say, I have a new printer. Please make it work. You need to have a process in place to make that work.
Check.
So that's pretty much it from the MDT perspective. We can go through those three scenarios kind of at both ends of the spectrum and come up with hybrid scenarios all day long. But hopefully we have enough flexibility in there that regardless of the scenario you come up with, we can figure out a way to do it. The biggest challenge is it may not be obvious how to do it. Like, you wouldn't necessarily go through the documentation and it would say, in order to do this, you need to modify the task sequence to change the selection profile to nothing and then set this other variable to this value and then the process will work. Now, it's not quite that prescriptive, so we end up dealing with blog postings and magazine articles and deployment guides examples and
or even
consultants
driver,
coming in that
driver novels I've seen.
Driver novels, yeah, blogs that have turned into very long, drawn-out descriptions of these basic scenarios. So definitely read up on those to figure out what's going on.
I recognize the author.
Yeah.
Is here.
That's
next to me. All right. That was LightTouch. How many of you are in here are using Config Manager to do OSD? A good few of you. Everything that Michael said is basically true for Config Manager as well. However, Config Manager is doing it differently. And it's not only doing it differently, it's also doing it differently depending on what Config Manager version you are having. So 07 is behaving a bit different than 012 does, but this is for 012 right now. We still have a driver catalog, and it's still being used for the same stuff as LightTouch is, to maintain a separate driver repository so that driver can be injected at deployment time. We don't have selection profiles in Config Manager, but we have categories, and that's our way to do filtering if we want to use the default auto-apply plug-and-play IDE-based deployment, so we can do that. But the purpose is, of course, to have the sequence inject the drivers into the store, so when the user finally plugs in that device, it's always available there. Now, the default method in config is using auto-apply. It is basically the total chaos method. Among the drivers that you import, the sequence will try to figure out through plug-and-play what drivers are needed. The total control equivalent is the apply driver package. where you specify lists of drivers that goes into a package, and you tell the sequence, please go ahead and deploy this package. Apply driver packages is your only choice if you still need to support XP for storage drivers, because Config Manager is one of the few platforms that supportedly can inject storage even for XP. Technically, you can do it with LightTouch as well, but that's a not supported scenario. But the Config Manager team took on the support to do this. If you are deploying Windows 7, you don't have to worry. A storage driver is like any other driver. So let's go into that instead. And I'm going to my demo machine. I'm going to my Config Manager server. And as Michael was mentioning before, I am pretty much a control freak when it comes to drivers. So I do create the source structure for my drivers. This is a subset of it because my structure right now is about 60 gigs in total. But I maintain a source which I clean up and make sure that I have a similar folder structure like Michael did. I just put together the architecture and the OS name into the same folder. And then I have a single folder per model. And these are extracted drivers, unpacked drivers that I maintain in this list. And I also have, in this case, I have a folder for XP where I have a few models. And I have a WinP folder. And as you can see, I'm only having a 32-bit WinP folder. Because in my Config Manager deployments, I never ever use the 64-bit boot image. I always use the 32 one, because that's the only get. That's the only boot image that can deploy both x86 and 64. The exception that Niehaus is mentioning is that in the upcoming Service Pack 1 CTP, what do you call it? CTP, yeah. Technology preview, whatever. They are adding in support for UEFI. And then you need to have the right platform of your boot image. So you need a 32-bit boot image to deploy 32-bit Windows 8 UEFI style and a 64-bit one for 64-bit. But for now, this is what I'm having. So in my console, you have the option of importing drivers. And in 07, you could actually create folder structures. And you can right-click a folder structure, and you can say import. You can't do that anymore. It's gone. You can see it's grayed out. It's not available. So there is no point of creating folders for this. Of course, you can import them first and then move them to a folder. But in 0.12, the way I recommend that you do drivers is simply import a driver. So I will specify one of the folders that I had. And I will just select the audio driver so it's actually a bit quicker. But we have four new options here available. How we can deal with duplicate drivers. These features became available through a series of hotfixes for 07, but now it's built into 012. And we also have the option of selecting what to do when there is a duplicate driver. And this is the default option. So I will click Next. And as you can see here, I can tag them. I can select the category. It can be named anything, but I've decided to name my categories along the OS and the model name. So in this case, I'm tagging the driver with the model number. And the reason I do this is to be able to search for this later on if needed. Now, in 07, you could create packages directly. And that's a feature I used all the time. I love that feature. It was not a supported feature. But it worked so well, so I quite frankly didn't care. You can't do that anymore. So this is the way you do it in 0.12. You import drivers, you tag them, and you add them to one or more packages. In this case, I'm selecting my 8510 package. I can also add them directly to my boot images. I don't. I keep a separate folder for my boot image drivers, and they are the only one I inject to my boot image. But the process is the same. So I will click Finish on this guide, or Next, and then close eventually. And now that driver is being added, I can go into the new search. I can search for my 8510W drivers. I can select a bunch of them. I can do edit. And I can add or remove them from different packages that I have directly from the repository. So I import drivers, I tag them, I make sure they are in the right packages. So in here I have a few driver packages for different models. If I double click my 8510 package, yes, I will see all the drivers that are in that package. And this is basically the total control style method. But something you should be aware of, and something that I learned during the beta of the product the hard way, is that if I select the driver, I can also see the supported models and what packages that are using this driver. And sometimes I pick a driver that is used, in this case, for multiple models. I mean, it's single instance store in Config Manager 12. The driver is only stored once, even if I used it in separate packages. So just by doing this sort of upgrade to 0.12 in terms of drivers, you're normally reducing the driver folder storage size in half, and meaning less to replicate because of the single instance store. Now, if you delete the driver from this repository, you're deleting it from all packages. I didn't quite expect that to happen, but I've learned. So now I don't delete drivers here unless I really want them to be deleted. But at least go into the usage and check what other packages that driver is available in. So I import the drivers, I tag them, I have my packages, I distribute them to my DPs. And if I have very, very many models, well, I need to combine them into a bit of a larger package. But still, I will still use packages on a model basis. I will go to my sequence. I will find a Windows 7 deployment sequence. This is the default step in it, doing the auto apply, plug and play. I simply disable that step. And as you can see here, I've created a folder called drivers. It's not in by default, but I added one. And then in here, I've added in apply driver package, the second method in config to apply packages. So this package that will deploy I will attend a copy-paste session after this. I have a name for it, and I set a condition on it to only apply this package if, for example, the following WMI query returns true. If I'm using the module alias script that Niehaus referred to, I can add it right in here and type in a variable from that user exit script. But I still love the WMI queries because it allows me to simply specify an identification for that specific model. And the reason I'm using like here in the query is so it actually looks for this string rather than the entire model name, because sometimes HP have a odd revision number in the end. And I now have a package and I have a condition on that package. And then I do a copy and paste and I have another package and I select a new one. For example, my ThinkPad, my Lenovo package. And I change it to my ThinkPad T420 Lenovo whatever name. But then I don't do models. For Lenovo's, they don't really work well with model. Lenovo's have a different identifier, much more usable. I use their computer system product. because that actually allows me to use their real name rather than the 7-digit number. I think this makes more sense to identify a Lenovo model. I don't have a package for Panasonic, but for Panasonic machines, they don't understand models either. But they have a short model name that actually identifies exactly that model, and that can be retrieved from the baseboard. So depending on your hardware vendor and your models that you have, you can often find one thing that identifies them. And when you do, you can have that as a condition for your package, and then life is good. So as long as you don't have too many models, and by too many I mean hundreds, you can create packages this way and set conditions, and life is good. The sequence will freak out if you add like 300 packages to it. It doesn't really like that. It's a buffer, WMI, whatever issue. But you shouldn't really have more than 150 models or so that you are deploying this specific sequence to, your 64-bit service pack one sequence.
There is another related challenge to that, too, that every package referenced by the task sequence, when the task sequence is advertised to a computer, it has to download policy for that.
Oh, yeah.
So if you think advertising a single task sequence to 10,000 machines that references 200 packages is just going to be like any other 10,000 machine advertisement, no, it's going to make your management points very busy downloading lots and lots of policies, 10,000 times 200 policies. That can put a significant dent into your infrastructure if your management points aren't sized appropriately to handle that type of load, because it's almost like you have 200 times the number of clients that you would typically have in your environment.
It almost sounds like something you actually experienced.
Yes, I've seen it. It's not pretty.
All right. So the question is basically around deployment times. Well, a driver package will always be a little bit quicker because you're just copying drivers locally and they are getting staged. The plug-and-play method will still need to do its plug-and-play thing, but as long as your driver packages are reasonably in size, that won't take too long. If you have an extreme large repository, that plug-and-play ID scanning can, you know, take a while, and that's also for light touch. We had one customer trying to build, I think they have like a 9-gig repository in light touch, and that caused the XML file to be, you know, quite big, and it took time to process that.
Yeah. Overall, though, generally the driver time is such a small percentage of the whole deployment time, maybe 20% at max. If it's more than 20%, something's wrong. But that doesn't mean you can't shoot yourself in the foot. Like, let's say you decide, oh, it would be great to do a config manager advertisement to refresh existing machines.
It's deployment now.
To do deployment, sorry, a deployment that refreshes existing machines, and I want to use download and execute instead of download on demand. And you have 200 steps in there, each of which references a driver package. Well, it's going to download all 200 of those driver packages. That's not a good idea. But if you're doing download on demand, then it only downloads the ones that it needs as it goes along. Policy-wise, it still downloads all the policies, but it only downloads the content that it needs. So there are some gotchas, but they're going to be fairly obvious when they occur. Overall, driver performance hasn't been a big concern. As long as it works, we don't care how long it takes.
I hope it answered your question.
Well, yeah, they mine the whole end-to-end time, but generally if you break down the time for a task sequence, depending on the user state and how much of that you're doing, it's usually a kind of a toss-up between the amount of time it takes to migrate and restore the user state versus the time it takes to apply the new OS. Drivers becomes a small sliver. patches really then becomes another variable depending on how you do your patching. So I haven't seen it be a major concern. Well, unless you consider the older MDT bugs where we would end up copying the same driver 25 times across a WAN link. Yeah, that was a bit of a pain, but we fixed most of those issues now that we only copy things once.
That's good. Once is better than 25. So these tips and tricks that we will end with here is unrelated to what type of OS deployment solution you use to actually deploy them, because no matter how you deploy drivers, they still will be put into that store and they will later be installed by the setup or the equivalent of the mini setup process. And when you deploy a driver and you have more of one driver that is matching the hardware, Windows is going to try to do its ranking, and it will generate a ranking score for each driver. And Mr. Nystrom, who is here on the heckler's row, here is waving, he wrote an excellent blog post on exactly how that ranking works. So by just looking at the log file, you can see which device driver it will actually pick. So if you go to his blog, which is the deployment bunny, I'm not kidding, .com, you can find an article on that one. In general, a driver needs to be signed, and that's especially true for Windows 7 64-bit. Drivers need to be signed. But sometimes you run into those rare scenarios where you need to modify a driver. Could be a network driver, could be something. Could be a bad INF file from the vendor. And rather than waiting for the vendor to fix it, you fix it. But what happens when you change a single byte in that file? Guess what? You break the signing. And now when Windows starts to do its ranking, it comes last in that list. So what you can do for those, and the resolution I recommend, simply sign the driver yourself. Create a certificate, sign the driver. It's not that difficult. And if you go to another geek's blog, which is named Deployment Research, you might actually find an article that says, sign your unsigned drivers, damn it, with a step-by-step instruction on how to sign drivers. It's not that difficult. So if you do have drivers that are not signed, it will take you 5 minutes to get them signed. And then they will behave as any other signed driver, and life is good. Right. How would you... Applications are still required for some device drivers, period. How do we inject them? How do we deal with them?
If you can use the same type of approach you were using in Config Manager of doing WMI queries or some type of step in the task sequence that says install this application when the criteria are met, you can then selectively install them only when they're required. So Bluetooth, mobile broadband, biometrics, things where you generally have that very tight coupling between the app and the software stack and the resulting driver, you may never be able to separate the two. So there are going to be exceptions where you just want to give up and say, I'm not going to use the normal driver injection for those. I'm going to install them as applications. Not applications where the user selects them because they would know that they need a Broadcom Bluetooth driver for this particular machine. No, that's not practical. You want to do that automatically using plug-and-play ID detection or some other WMI query to detect the need for that.
Or using models in the file and install applications that way. One way or another, find an identifier so you deploy that app for a given set of models.
Yeah, which kind of goes back to the consistency too. If you know that every single Dell Latitude that you ever buy has a Bluetooth adapter in it, you can easily install that on every single Dell machine you deploy. But if yesterday's batch doesn't and today's batch does, now you're back to using plug and play IDs.
Exactly. So by that, ladies and gentlemen, there are a good few deployment sessions left to tech it. I would really highlight the last one. There is a Jeopardy game show on Thursday. Well, I'll be competing against him with a few others. It's normally a blast. But our time is up. Thank you. Remember the evals. Be honest, but, you know, gentle. And, yeah, we'll be here for questions.